Oh, I think this is me, right?
That's Donovan.
Hello, Ticket Stock.
Yeah.
Hello, Donovan.
We are back at Mullen & Mullen Injury Law Firm, Ticket Stock 2026, brought to you by Chiloso Mexican Bistro. It is now time for roundtables before we are joined by our headliner on stage at 6 o'clock, and that is Pudge Rodriguez. Ooh. So everyone, right to left, Junior Miller.
Yay.
Yay.
Okay. Sean Bass.
Yay.
Davey Lane.
Yay.
Corby Davidson.
Yay.
Bob Sturm.
Yay.
Donovan Lewis.
Yay.
Matt McLaren.
Yay.
David Mino.
Yay.
And ladies and gentlemen,
yeah.
It's the big man, Jub Jub, Moose George Dunham.
All right.
Thank you. Standing ovation.
Woo!
It's way too big an intro, but thank you, Don.
Man, walked up with a shot of tequila and just living life how you're supposed to live it.
That's right.
Well, we thought about you as...
Did you take a shot?
Nah, it's just water. It looked good, though.
Oh. God, you don't have to...
Tiny water?
It's Maestro.
That is the tiniest water I've ever seen.
Well, that's what they had back there. Didn't bring my own cup.
We did enjoy a nice frozen awesome at lunch, just in your honor today.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, man.
I tried to match you in drinking
taste. Out here,
or
did y'all go somewhere?
We went to my restaurant.
Yeah.
Okay.
We went off campus for a little bit.
Oh, man.
Had a couple frozen awesomes just to, you know, kind of bide the time. But I thought about you with every sip. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. I just didn't know if
you're chiming me, but that's okay.
I didn't know if it would step over some boundaries as far as...
I did hear you talking about that the other day, and I do have, and I think maybe Craig noticed this first. If we go out, we have a beer or a margarita, whatever, I do finish mine in like 8
You are
six
a
seconds.
Siphon.
I don't know what that is.
I don't understand how you can do that.
I don't know if I'm afraid they're going to take it away from me.
Do you not get brain freeze at all?
Sometimes, yeah. Frozen awesome.
But it's worth it. Just fight through it?
Yeah.
God.
So worth it.
It knocks me out. So your number one most favorite frozen awesome is just the standard frozen margarita? Or
no,
do you go from there?
I used to go swirl. Now I go mango is my number one.
The mango mousse.
The mango mousse.
Mango margarita.
I think that's
Jeb, I knew you like swirl.
But they don't have that.
Oh, yeah. Full rankings.
Who doesn't have
well,
that?
I'm saying they don't have that at every restaurant, do they?
Just the mango? About most Tex-Mex places have mango.
Do they?
Really?
Yeah. Rarely do you run into I don't have mango.
Huh.
Try it. It's really good.
I will try it later.
Did it bump up to number one?
Last spring or summer, we went to a place and they were so good.
Had enough strength of schedule, you could get it up there one.
And then my kids, as an effort to either appease me or put me in an early grave, got a frozen awesome machine for me for my birthday. And we made mango mousse for my birthday. And it was
really
strong. Yeah, that's good. Let's get hammered with Dad for his birthday. What a great influence I am.
Yeah, why not?
Man, that's the one thing. I'm 54 years old, and I've never had a drink with my dad ever in my life.
Really?
Nope.
That is bizarre. Wow.
Nope. I don't curse around him.
Does he drink?
Not often. He will, but he's not. You know, one time he surprisingly made me a whiskey and Coke when I didn't even ask for it. So I'm over at their house, and he hands me a glass. I'm like, okay, thank you. I didn't even ask for it. And I took a sip, and I looked at him, and he's kind of nodding at me. Like, man, I was out of nowhere. I didn't even ask for it. But that's the only time, man.
Take your shirt off.
Let's take him with us next time we go have frozen awesomes. Let's take your dad with us.
Did your dad drink, Gordon?
No. No, actually, I did have a drink with my dad once. My dad was not a drinker. He was a Baptist minister, but when I took him to Scotland, because that was his lifelong dream, was to go to Scotland, because he studied our Scottish heritage and all that. But when I took him to Scotland as a gift to him, we went to one of the distilleries or whatever, and we had some Scottish whiskey together.
Really?
So, yeah.
Was he hammered?
No, No. I mean, we probably drank half a shot glass worth over a three-hour conversation.
Just tasting, right.
Yeah, it was a long conversation.
He had on tearaway pants, and he just tore it away with raw dog in a kilt.
Yeah.
He runs up on stage and starts singing Big Country.
I think that's Australian.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
No.
That's Scottish?
It is about the Cold War, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Cold War anthem.
Dreams stay with you in the big country.
Mm-hmm. My when my
that was unstable because the band's name was the same as their one song.
Yeah. Big Country with the hit Big Country.
It's weird.
You're not going to talk any about the basketball player, Bob?
He refuses to.
Oh.
The what?
Want to do a Brian Reeves joke?
Don't act like it's beyond you.
Well, I was just...
I listen to the Hardline every day.
All right, is everybody ready for Bob's joke?
Okay.
There
yeah,
it
yeah, yeah.
There's no joke.
You Where did he go to high school?
Come on, Bob. Bob.
Bob.
You can't
Bob.
Do that.
Bob. Bob.
This is great. Y'all are going to love this. Y'all are going to love this.
Okay, Bob.
So Brian Reeves walks into a bar.
Yeah.
There's no joke. I'm sorry. What a horrible thing
to do. He didn't stick the
to
dismount.
Me. Well, there's no mount.
Where did he go to high school? Big Country. Somewhere around here, right?
Did he go to Duncanville?
No, that was Ostertag,
right?
Ostertag. Oh.
He was from a Who school in no Oklahoma, wasn't he? Right?
That is the most racist thing you've ever
Oklahoma
said.
Oklahoma City?
What? That Bryant Rees is from here?
I don't know what you're referring to, but I guarantee you that's not the case.
No, that's fair. On today's show, that is the most...
I hung out with him in San Francisco. That is not the most racist
there's
thing
no
he
way
said.
Whatever he just said.
I was around when he said much worse.
He went to Gans, Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it God, I've never even heard of that high. Before.
I haven't either.
Gans.
God, I bet his mom was horrible looking.
Wow.
Corby?
Wow.
Well, he's like 8 feet.
Why would he wasn't country... born 8 feet.
Then he had a flat top.
Why would Big Country's mom take a stray on
you think she
the first day
top?
Of ticket stock?
Yeah, I bet she had a flat top.
He was born.
You mean the hairstyle, right?
Down at 8 feet, she's just walking along, and he's just coming out the whole way.
Like a horse?
Yeah.
They're just doing
it's just a giant birth sack. She's dragging it across the field.
Whose idea was it to put Corby, Gordon, and Dave together down there?
No it's one.
A transparent Santa sack of full.
It Boy. Says here his mom had a different nickname, although somewhat close to
it. Oh,
him.
My God.
Craig.
But I can't.
It was spelled differently.
Now, there's a sports joke right there.
A little shorter.
Big tree.
Okay, we did not. We promised this yesterday in at our pre-show.
Pre.
That you would tell the story of the time that you accidentally farted in some girl's room.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah, we told that on the podcast. All right, this is 1,000 years ago because Craig and I were freshmen at North Texas.
It was not.
And it was a long time ago. And all we were concerned with our freshman year was making people laugh, mainly each other.
Indeed.
And a lot of that had to do with flatulence. And that's where, that was the year the fart tape was made.
Which we find out that Craig, it doesn't exist.
Right. No, I don't have a copy.
Exist.
There was only one copy, I think, and Alvin got it.
Yeah, Alvin had it.
I thought there was a duplicate.
Well, yeah, but I don't... We had the original. I have no idea whatever happened to that. It was a cassette. There's no way 40 years later that exists.
You mean the Smithsonian doesn't have a...
No, I think it was stolen by thieves and sold on the black market for like $1 million.
Yeah. Probably so.
Rest in peace.
I think you're right, Craig.
There's about 8 minutes of great humor on that thing. That it was recorded
guys,
over two semesters.
You had
semesters.
Enough for 8 minutes worth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just think how long one usually lasts.
That's
it
like
took two semesters.
So
and there
ridiculous.
Was some. There were specific memorable farts as well. Like there was the one that we called the Womp Chank fart because that's what it sounded like. And his roommate, I was across the hall from him, and his roommate Skip, who's still we're good friends with to this day, it was his stereo, so he controlled everything. So the cassette was always on record pause, and when someone had a fart, they would run into the room. Skip had the worst job. He would grab the microphone and hold it up to the guys.
They wouldn't have to say anything. They just have to open the door, and Skip would go over there and get the microphone.
And then Skip would hit release the pause button. The guy would fart. Then Skip would hit pause again and wait for the next person to come in, which might be 5 minutes later or 5 days later. You never know.
He was our sound man.
Oh, yeah.
Skip was. Well, how often did you guys have listening parties? Like go back and review?
The idea was to make a compilation and then play it on our... It was a combo stereo. I had two speakers. Skip had two. And it was really loud. And we were always playing pranks. And we thought That would be a great one to blast 8 minutes worth of farts at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Like and an we album did. Release at Kerr Hall.
Yeah, and we did. And wasn't that the time somebody came down and said I thought that half of the dorm was collapsing?
Yeah.
But anyway, so that was our line of humor. That was if you wanted a guaranteed laugh, do that.
Were you guys able to tighten up the tape with some
edits? They had to raise it and edit a bit.
This was before we were with the radio station. We didn't have a chance to edit it.
Just
use the pause button, you know. But anyway, so we were working on another prank where we lived in a co-ed dorm, so there were girls living above us. We were on the second floor, and there were girls living above us. And somehow we knew that the guy we were trying to prank kind of liked this girl. So we threw a fake Olympic party with the idea that this girl would act like she was interested, invite this guy back to her room, and then we would pop out of the closet and say, hey, she's not coming back. Ah, you've been pranked. Terrible prank. But when we tried to explain it to her, Craig was going over the finer points of the prank, and I just burst in to crack him up, forgetting where I was. This is how we were just, like, insane. And I burst in, tile floor. It's got to be the loudest fart of the North Texas area.
Yes.
Of the last 50 years. And then I realized as she then turned her head and looked right at me, I just said, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I forgot where I was. And I ran out of the room,
leaving me there with her to explain what just happened.
And I was out in the hallway, cry laughing on the ground, just trying to silently laugh. So yeah, we told that in our most embarrassing moments. That was so embarrassing.
So she was sitting at the desk, right?
Yeah.
I was standing behind her.
I was standing next to her at the desk. And the door was behind me, so I'm saying, so what you'll do is you'll come in, you'll get to know his name is John, he's got curly hair. So then I hear the door open behind me, and George walks in, comes up, stands next to me for about 3 seconds.
I think I probably lifted a leg. Yeah.
Rips the loudest fart I've ever heard, and then runs out. So what is she thinking?
Hits his head on the drop ceiling.
I'm sorry for you kids that have to hear that story. The lesson there is don't fart, okay?
As George stares into her eyes.
No, I didn't.
Lifts his leg.
Did you have intense eye contact?
No.
At the moment of detonation?
No.
Oh, and by the way, she ended up doing the prank for us.
Yeah.
George and I hid in her closet. She asks John to come back up to her room and gets in there, and she starts to get, like, kind of frisky with him, but didn't really do anything. And
so
then she goes, I'm sorry, I've got to use the restroom. I'll be right back. So she leaves. He comes over right where the closet door was. There was a mirror, and he's doing his hair like this in the mirror. And we're looking through the crack of the door, and then we just bust open the door. Guess what? She's not coming back.
What do we have here?
That is so terrible.
So mean.
But you don't understand. We were in a prank war.
Yeah, that was war.
Oh, okay.
We were playing pranks on each other, 3 versus 3 guys in the dorm the whole semester.
Yeah, that's all we did.
Martial law. You can do whatever.
It was.
What is a fake Olympic party?
Well,
it was the Winter Olympics, right?
Yeah.
84?
Must have been the 84 Olympics.
Yeah.
And we had to have a fake party. So we said, hey, we're having an Olympic party. Everybody come down. So we had a bunch of people in our room, including them. It was very well orchestrated. And fart didn't derail the prank. We still were able to pull that off.
Bob, it was an actual party, but created under false pretenses.
Not a fake Olympics.
What is happening?
Yeah. You got a luge in there.
You didn't stage an Olympics.
Yeah.
Everything said in the room. You had to call the IOC. Yeah. Like,
fake Sarajevo skyline.
Yeah,
all right, it's 5:52. We have one more roundtable before we bring out the headliner, which is Pudge Rodriguez. He'll be on the stage in just a second, but one more roundtable live from Mullen & Mullen Injury Law Firm, Ticket Stock 2026, here on The Ticket.
Yes, and thanks to our fine sponsors, including Mullen & Mullen Injury Law Firm, as they sponsor Ticket Stock 2026. Thanks to all the P1s who've come out. Pudge Rodriguez is just minutes away here from our stage at the Plano Event Center. The great Pudge.
Is Pudge aware of being called Pooch?
It's a question.
Okay. I'll let you ask.
First one.
Be the first one out of the gate.
Pooch.
Pooch. I can't remember what the site was. I think it was a Town East Mall, our first ticket stock.
Really?
Was that our first one in Mesquite?
Yeah. First one was Dallas Convention
Dallas
Center.
Convention Center,
second
then Mesquite.
One was town,
yeah.
Town East.
Not
Mall.
Town East,
yeah.
But it was
big,
where?
Town.
In
the
big town.
Big town.
Yeah, big town. Thank you.
And it was the Wrestler.
Yeah.
Big.
And we had some NASCAR guys too, didn't we?
The Undertaker?
No, he was
Kabuki?
Sting.
It was Kabuki. Yes.
Andre the Giant.
No, it was Mankind.
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 Yeah.
Well,
that's
he was
right.
Here.
Mick
it was Mick Foley.
Oh, that was
Mick
here.
Mick Foley was here.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Forget everything I said.
Well, anyway, whatever
Hulk
the
Hogan.
The first
Fudge.
Couple of ticket stocks we had, we were all just amazed that people showed up. We still are. A huge crowd of P1s here.
Look at this crowd
today.
This
it's amazing.
Crowd.
It's
incredible. Very fun
and
crowd.
It also amazes us every year that people like travel here from not just across the state, but across the country. Where's Matt?
Matt,
Tampa
right
guy?
Right
from Tampa.
From Tampa. There he is, right back there.
Right,
yes.
Matt.
Yeah. Matt came here all the way from Tampa.
Yeah.
Still listens to the station
good.
Every
all
day.
Right. War Eagle.
Matt, the
Lee.
Bourbon. I got you.
There's a
Lee.
P1 by the name of Lee who also came here all the way from Florida.
Lee.
He was a dude who
talking
used to travel here.
Lee.
He used to travel here from El Paso, but he came all the way from Florida. That's just amazing. Every year,
we have flight routing.
We have folks that come in. So thank you all very much for coming out. That's incredible.
And if you want your name called out, if you want your name called out next year, move out of state.
Yeah. We don't have time to call everybody's name.
Didn't we used to have some P1s that came from Kansas every year?
We've had Kansas, North Carolina,
Tennessee,
California.
Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Canadian
let's just name all the states.
Flower Mound.
Yeah. Rhode Island.
Flower Mound. Yeah.
It's not a
that
state.
State.
Mm-hmm. Vermont.
Okay. Good answer.
Confusion.
Yeah.
Well,
North Carolina.
I sincerely appreciate the P1s
Arkansas.
Traveling here. These guys just think it's a joke.
An eagle's not an animal.
Erection.
That's a Bob over there.
California.
Everything's
I talked to a couple from Plano.
Oregon. No way.
Washington.
But what was the year that...
Try to help your show.
Utah.
What
no,
was the
weren't.
Year, Bob, that y'all had...
Obviously.
Colorado.
That y'all had Jared from Subway up here.
Oh.
Yeah, that
yeah.
was a Bob deal. And that story
a
had
Bob
just broke
deal.
Up the
yeah.
year before.
Right.
Didn't
yeah.
you call him your food, Jordan?
Jared.
Oh, my goodness.
At the time...
Who
you're
knew?
Like the best dude I've
you're
ever
so
known.
You're so great.
They were.
You're such an inspiration to
there's
the children.
There's no way you're going to get caught up in a bad story.
Yeah,
it's
incredible. Let's go over the controversy you're promoting here today.
Okay, yeah. It was before the
I know
controversy.
You'll never let us cold cut combo fans down.
Ever. There's nothing you can do. Meanwhile, he's stuffing kids in his pants to run out of here.
Wow.
Jeez.
Good Lord.
He's tying him up in his oversized pants that he brings up as the promotional gig.
Throws him over his shoulder
Santa
like a Santa sack.
Jeez.
I did hold those pants.
Why did you want him,
Bob? We are missing 11 children out here at Ticket Stock right
after
now.
After Jared left.
Man.
Coming up next, Jeffrey Epstein's going to join us.
Talk about a good dude.
I mean, despite all the island stuff he's done, he's really good with finance. And
why is his voice so deep?
Boy,
no, it's like, who is this?
Boy, turned into follow-up.
Poor Bob. I'm sorry, Bob. It's just it's the hour, you know, between 3 and 7. It's just... the time to kick Bob, I guess.
By the way, I think he's about
I've noticed that, too.
I think he's going to get out of jail pretty soon.
Who?
Bob? Jared, didn't we do a story on that? That he's...
They didn't kill him?
No.
Who's them? Who killed him?
Like the prisoners, don't they kill child people?
Child people?
Child molesters is what you're... Yeah.
This is the dumbest station in America.
They make child people past people.
No, I think he's up for parole here pretty soon.
Really?
2027.
Bob will be speaking at it, I'm sure, on his behalf.
Is he really?
Yeah. I can't wait till our next...
At his parole hearing?
Well,
obviously, yeah.
I can't wait till our next
again,
brainstorming meeting.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
That tuna foot long is just something special.
That'll be Bob at our next meeting. Dude, the guy serves his time, okay? Stop for me. Headliner, maybe not.
It's
maybe
basically
just
the entire Greg Hardy conversation, but substitute Jared in.
He can be paroled in 2029.
Look, if he's free,
okay.
The Cowboys.
Okay, not too far off.
The Cowboys.
2030.
Look, the Cowboys need sacks. He's free.
You get him.
Don't worry about
what could go wrong.
Whole futon thing. How many years was he sentenced to?
Like
20? Greg Hardy?
15 years in prison.
No, Jared.
Some change. What was his last name? Like Foligno or something?
Fogle.
Foligno. Why is that the first name that comes to mind?
It's not that far off from Fogle.
He was close.
Is there anyone in the world named Foligno?
No.
Yes.
I mean, he's the incredible Hulk.
Foligno.
Thank you. He's the incredible subway man. He's got you on hockey.
Yes.
See? By the way, are there any, besides Monty, are there any other King of Queens fans here?
I watched it.
Right. Yeah, Lou Ferrigno was their neighbor. Yeah. He was awesome in it.
He was the Hulk.
He was.
You can play other people.
Characters.
Jeez.
But he played Lou Ferrigno.
He did.
In the show.
He was really good.
All green?
No, he wasn't all green.
Wasn't he deaf?
That's when he got
yes.
mad, Bob.
They had to cover up the green makeup with flesh color makeup.
All right, he really was a good actor.
He wasn't really a Hulk in real life.
Did that scare you as a kid, the Hulk?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, that creeped me out.
You were old, though. You were...
I wasn't old as a kid.
You were an old kid.
You were an old kid.
Fourth grade is old. That's how old I was.
For Jared Fogle, it's pretty old.
I think, yeah. Do you think Jared Fogle could have stuffed you in his pants?
All right.
You have to answer that.
Let's hope.
Got a big one here.
Let's hope that.
Got to eat more sandwiches.
$5 footlong.
Bang for my buck. This is delicious.
And a cookie.
It's such a good idea to have everybody on the round table at once. Let's hope Pudge wasn't listening backstage. But Pudge Rodriguez is coming up next here at TicketStock.
This is Sports Radio.
We are at Mullen & Mullen Injury Law Firm TicketStock 2026. Brought to you by Chiloso Mexican Bistro, and it is time to meet our headliner for TicketStock this year. And these next three segments, as we visit on stage here at the Plano Center with our headliner, brought to you by Phil Dill Boats and visitbigbend.com. And for the next three segments, we get to visit with a 14-time Major League Baseball All-Star, a 13-time Gold Glove winner, a World Series champion, an American League Most Valuable Player, and arguably the greatest Texas Ranger and greatest catcher in baseball history. Ladies and gentlemen, Pudge Rodriguez.
Yes. Hey.
How are you? Good to see you.
Pudge, good to see you.
Nice to see you.
The Pudge-a-roo.
Pudge. All right, bud. Good to see you, man.
There he is. How's it going?
Don't call him buddy.
Don't
call him buddy.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Pudge. Good to see you.
Hey, Pudge. Good to see you.
How come Donnie was the only one that got a hug?
Yeah.
He knows him.
I've got it like that. Hey, he smells wonderful. My goodness.
So great to have Pudge Rodriguez with us as our headliner at TicketStock 2026. Pudge, thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be with all of you here. Appreciate it. Good to see all of you again.
You bet.
And you guys, too. So it's always fun to be here.
We have a lot of questions for you, but I'm going to start with one, and it's kind of odd, and it came up this morning on our show. When is the last time you threw from behind the plate down to second base as though you're trying to get a runner?
2012.
Okay. That's what I thought. I figured I said it had been at least 10 years. So
yes, it's been a long time. So, yes.
How's your velocity now? Could you gun it down to second?
From here to there. I hit the golf ball longer now.
Yeah.
Well, you look like you're keeping in great shape, but baseball part of it is not a part of your working out anymore, even playing toss with somebody?
Well, I would still work for the Rangers, and obviously I go to spring training. Mm-hmm. And when I go to spring training, I always put my catcher's mat on, and And I play catch with the guy. So, but not much, to be honest. I don't know when I swing the bat. I mean, it's been a long, long years. I mean, they haven't swung the bat. But I did that a lot. I mean, I think I play enough. I think 25 years enough.
Yeah.
And so, but no, I'm spring training. That's the only chance that I have a chance to play catch with the guys.
Yeah.
You know, Craig was saying how, you know, arguably you're the greatest catcher to ever play this game, and if not the greatest Ranger, you're in the discussion. But the thing that always amazed me about you, and I love talking about this, is that when you got here as a teenager, you really, really tried hard at your English. Uh-huh. Like, you worked your butt off. When a lot of people didn't.
I'm still learning.
Yeah, I mean, it's a never-ending thing, right?
Same. Yeah, all of us.
I'm still learning English.
But, I mean, was that something that when you got here as a kid, you're like, I am going to figure this out. I'm going to crack this code.
Yeah, absolutely. We have when I was 16, we have a teacher in spin training and also in traditional league that we have to go from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock at night, mandatory to go and take English classes. So,
did some people show up and some people didn't show up?
No, everybody. All Latin guy has to be there.
Okay.
If we know, we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Or we're going to run laps on the ballpark. But I learned that in Puerto Rico, obviously, we have mandatory English classes. But my first wife, she grew up in Brooklyn.
Yep.
New York, so she was one of the person that helped me a lot and to learn the English, teach me at home, and when my kids also born here, when they are in school, we had to go and speak English to the teacher. So
yep.
For me, it was good for me to learn, and I have to learn really the hard way because my position.
Right.
You know, being a catcher, obviously you have to communicate with the pitchers and the starting pitchers and the pitching coach and all that. And for me, it was not easy, but at the same time, yes, because I'm never afraid.
Yeah.
I was never afraid to speak because obviously when you're a Latino person, you know, the first thing that you're going to see from everyone else, this guy is going to be it's going to be fun, you know, play fun on me, or yep. I'm going to be embarrassed. And for me, I didn't have that. I was trying to speak English, but obviously one of those words that I speak to the coach or to the players, they got it right away. And they say, I know, I understand what you're saying. You're good.
Yeah.
But I never afraid to speak it. I've been doing all this for a lot of years, and in the beginning, I was very, very embarrassed or nervous. Now I'm fine.
I'm good.
I'm good. You know, I can speak my Spanglish really good everywhere. So, for me, that's plenty.
When you were young and you were first learning English, were there any English language shows, TV shows that you would watch to kind of pick up on like slang or anything like that?
No, I was baseball. I watch baseball. I'm a sport guy. I'm not a soap opera person. I'm not a movie person. I mean, I'm trying to watch movies at home on the theater, and 5 minutes I'm out sleeping.
It happens.
Sleeping, but sport for me. I love to watch every sport. I'm a fan of every sport.
Didn't you get married the day you got called up to the Rangers? The day before that, you mentioned your
well, when that happened, we was doing a rehearsal. We was practicing.
Ah.
The wedding supposed to be the next day.
Okay.
And what happened was the next day they called me up.
Yeah.
But what was that like? You're 19. You're trying to. You're now in Texas, and you're catching Nolan Ryan, Julio Franco's on the field, Rafael Palmeiro. Was that intimidating to you when you came up as a 19-year-old?
Well, honestly, no. I was a little nervous when I catch Nolan for the first time. But my worry the most was my first game that I catch Kevin Brown. You know, Kevin Brown at the time was one of the best pitchers, but his sinker was one of the best. And for a lot of catchers, it's very very difficult to catch that kind of sinker coming at almost 100 miles an hour. But I was able to do a good job with him. And then the second game, you know, I catch Nolan. And when that day happens, we always do a report, like kind of like a team meeting or a pitcher and catcher in the coach meeting. And that's what I was kind of a little nervous at the time when he came
sure,
into
it's
the,
Nolan. Yeah.
When he came to the office and Bobby Valentine was there and Tom Howe was there, and then Nolan came in, you know, with shorts, sandals, and sit down.
I hope you don't mind me, ball huggers.
Yeah. Pretty much like that. And then, and so I look at him, and you know, I sit down. And we start the meeting, and I start, you know, doing the meeting, and just the first batter, he just said right away to me, he said, "Stop. Stop. Forget about 1-9. Forget about everybody. I have this pitch that you're going to put down, and I'll throw it to you. One is fastball. Two is a curveball. And four is a changeup. Just put a finger down, and I'm going to throw the ball to you."
That's all you need to know.
And I'm like, okay.
And they're probably not going to hit it, yeah.
So I know that he's a fastball pitcher, so what do I do? I call pretty much almost 90% fastball inside. But sure. He loves to hit people. And so basically, he didn't check me up much, like probably maybe 2 or 3 times. And he pitched, I think I remember he pitched like 7 innings, just 2 hits, and we win the game. And then at the end of the game, he comes to my locker and says, "Kid, how you know me that well?" And I'm like, "No, the only thing I did just go fastballs inside of you. go fastballs to you." And I'm like, "No, that's the way I love to pitch. I love to pitch in, and then I get everybody out, down away." I'm like, "That's what I did.
Wow.
That's what I did to you. So that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm here and telling you." So we end up doing a good job. He went first time, 7 inning, 90% of the pitcher was fastball. Hit a couple of guys, and, you know, that was it.
So
that's great.
So what happened with the wedding then? Because you were supposed to get married and get called up.
Interesting.
That's probably a weird conversation that day. Probably
you want me to say that? No, we obviously I talked to her, and basically I said to her that we have to delay it. She said we have 2 choices: or stay, or we're going to Chicago, because they called me out to the big league. And her eye was like, "No, we are going to Chicago. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it."
Okay.
So we went to Chicago, and then the following year in spring training, we got married in Port Shelter.
Okay. That's awesome.
Nice.
So you catch Nolan early on. You talked about catching Nolan. Was that the best that you ever caught, or did you catch somebody else in your career afterwards?
He was obviously there. I got the privilege to catch for 21 years in the big league and catch a lot of good ones. The 14 years that I played in the All-Star game, I obviously catching good ones in All-Star games. But as a teammate, I say Nolan, I say Kenny Rogers, I say Kevin Brown, I say Jose Guzman, Bobby Witt, those guys, obviously. But for me, I mean, if we if I start saying names, we hear into next week. Into next week. But for me, it was very nice for all of them, because all, for me, they're great pitchers. Doesn't matter who's who. But as long as we communicate and we're in the same page, for me, they're all good pitchers.
Did you have to catch many knuckleballers?
No. No, not even once.
Wow, really?
Not even once.
Okay.
Thank God.
I guess Charlie Huff was gone by the time he got
we there. We have a couple in spin training as knuckleballers, but it wasn't for me. I said, no chance. No chance for me. No for me.
All right, we've got much more with Pudge Rodriguez coming up, our headliner here at Mullen & Mullen Injury Law Firm. Ticket stock 2026.
All right, it's 6:34 here at Mullen & Mullen Injury Law Firm. Ticket stock 2026 live at the Plano Center. We are in the middle of talking to our featured guest, the great Pudge Rodriguez, the Hall of Famer, the man who helped shape many of our Ranger fandom back in the day, launched the Rangers into kind of what they are right now. And I don't know what, Pudge, how much you were aware of Texas Ranger baseball before you got to town, but there really wasn't that much to cheer about for the first 20 years. It was the bar was very low, and the minute you got there and the new ownership group took over, and you know, you mentioned Bobby Valentine, things started to go up pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, I remember when I signed back in when I was 16 years old. I remember the Bobby Valentine and Sandy Johnson went and seen me in Puerto Rico in one of those tryouts. And
you were how old?
I was 15 at the time.
Wow.
I was 15 at the time when I was doing the tryouts in Sports City of Roberto Clemente in Puerto Rico. And it was like a big tryout with a bunch of scouts there, and it was a lot of catchers getting ready, right, to do their throwing and do everything. And so I was pretty much last in the list. I was like 8 or 9 in the list, because the person they signed me, his name is Luis Rosa, and he has a couple of guys ahead of me before I was there, and I was warming up at the time, and I was in the outfield, and I was throwing long toss, and I was from the line. I was throwing the ball in the air all the way to right center in the air, and Sandy Johnson and Bobby Valentine said, "Who's that kid in the very last in the warning track?" I said, "Well, you're going to see him in a minute. He's going to be number 9. And Sandy said, no. I want him to be the first one throwing. Mm-hmm. And so they brought me in, and then when I put my catching gear on, and I said, "You ready to throw second base?" I said, "Yeah, I'm ready." So they throw me the ball, and the first throw, I threw at 93 miles an hour to second base.
Jeez.
93.
At 15.
At 15, at 93 Jeez. Miles an hour to second base, and Sandy Johnson and Bobby Valentine said, no more. Don't throw it. Yeah. Bobby went to Luis Rosa and signed that kid. Now, they didn't see me hitting and anything. I didn't hit anything. I just went to the room and get the contract, and they brought me into intentionally.
So
a week later,
do you remember what the contract was for? How much you made as a 15-year-old at that moment?
It was a lot of money back then. I got a big $7,500.
Still though,
check. For me, was
a
lot.
You're freaking out.
For me, was a lot back in the days. But yeah, I signed for $7,500, and I went to intentional league for 2 months. And I learned a lot there, you know, be away from the family, because obviously when you're 15 years old, 16 years old, it's very difficult to leave the family. And I was good on that part. That was the best part because my parents teach me and my brother just to be you and just to do the things that you want to do in life. And they always said, we're going to be here for you all the time, but when the time comes, you're out. You're going and do it. So it was very difficult, obviously, because you're missing mommy and papi when you're living by yourself, especially that age. But for me, mentally, I was having my mind for a goal. And my goal was to become a Major League Baseball player, make the big leagues. And I worked hard for that. And I was one of those players that in two years and 1 month, I was in the big league. I'm 19 years old. Mm.
Dang. That's incredible.
Same.
So, like, at what age...
Don't say that.
At what age did you get the feel that you're one of the best kids you've seen? Or that certainly, if you can be one of the best catchers in baseball history, I'm guessing at age 10, you kind of knew you had something.
Yeah. Well, I started playing when I was 7. But when I started playing sport at 7, I played... different sports. I was a baseball player. I played basketball, and believe it or not, I'm 5'9", but I was a very good. I was very good volleyball player, and I jump and kill the ball very good. Very good, and I'm still doing that. I'm still doing that when I'm with my family. But I think that helps me because my parents give me the opportunity to be me. Mm-hmm. And to play every sport, and that's my advice. That every time I'm in stage like this, I talk to parents and say, let the kid enjoy being a kid.
Yeah,
being a kid. Do not stop a kid to be a basketball player or a baseball player. You should say, I'm going to support you 100%. Because at the end, the kid is going to decide what sport he's going to play. And that's what I did. I play volleyball. I was very good in volleyball. I played basketball. I wasn't okay. Baseball was the sport that I dominated the most because I was having a good arm since a little kid. And I was a good player, a good baseball player. And then I told my dad at the when I was 12 that I just gonna stop playing the other sports and become a baseball player. And then the question that my dad asked me after that, I said, okay, you want to be a baseball player? Okay, what position? Because I played third base, I played shortstop, I was a pitcher, I was a catcher, I was an outfield because my bat. I said, what position you want to do? I said, I want to be a catcher. Okay, so you sure you want to be a catcher? Say, Dad, I want to be a catcher. So we start working.
Why'd you feel that way about catcher?
Because I was the one that I liked the most.
Okay.
Yeah. I was good in third base. I was good in all those positions that I just mentioned to you. But for some reason, catcher was for me.
Okay. Did you ever think about pitching at all? Because you do have a strong arm if you're throwing 93 at 15.
Well, I was a hard thrower, but I don't know where the ball is going. I just throw it.
Yeah, right.
I just throw it to the catcher, and hopefully the catcher catch it.
Right.
You know,
right.
But no, I decided to be behind the plate because I feel that that was the position that I wanted to be in. And believe it or not, you guys see my height. I'm 5'9", but 5'9" is one of the best heights to be a good catcher. To be a catcher, you know, you say 6'4", 6'5", or 6'2", but look how many 6'4", 6'5", 6'3" got hurt a lot.
Did that save your knees being a little bit more compact?
I catch over 20-some-hundred games. These two knees, no surgeries.
Wow.
Wow.
No surgeries.
How about catching in the heat every day in Arlington?
Over 100 degrees every day, no roof?
For me, it was okay. Puerto Rico is 100 degrees every day. For me, it was fine. I feel sorry for all the other teammates of mine that they suffer out there, and I was having fun, you know, catching in 100 degrees. For me, was nice. I hate to play in 20 degree weather. Mm-hmm. That's not fun, especially when you hit and you hit the ball run on the bat. I mean, you're feeling in those hands, and you have your hand numb for more than 10 minutes. But the heat wasn't bothering me. I drink a lot of water when I was a player, and I was fine.
So you breezed by that, but I think it's important that everybody knows you've caught more games than anybody in baseball by more than a full season, and you've caught more innings than anybody in Major League Baseball history by hundreds of innings. I mean, those are records
won't be broken.
They can't be broken, probably, right?
Well, nothing is.
But people play with two catchers all the time. I just don't think anybody could get close to that.
Well, nothing is impossible. Anybody can do it. But I think
I'm going to try.
But the one thing that I know by fact is that all my records that I have, especially games, if someone trying to pass me has to play more than 23 years.
Oh,
dang.
God, I'm going to be 80.
More than 23 years, and I played 21.
Yeah. Yeah, that's incredible.
So, Pudge, you come up playing at the old ballpark, and then in 94 you get the new ballpark. And I don't know how you guys felt as players, but as fans, that felt like the organization became much more legitimate. What was your thoughts of playing in that new park after the old one?
Well, beautiful, beautiful ballpark. I mean, I still believe that we have a new one. I mean, that old ballpark that we have was unbelievable for me. I love to play outdoors. I love to play in the heat. If you see the ballpark, still look brand new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, every time we drive to the new one. But when we moved from the old to the new one, it was completely different. I think we changed everything. Basically, the whole thing changed. And we make a lot of changes.
The red uniforms?
Yeah,
everything from the uniforms all the way to pretty much a lot of people from the front office, coaches and all that. And we wanted to, you know, start brand new, like brand new ballpark, brand new team. And we did it, and we start putting a good team every year and become a winning team and see the fans come in, you know, see 40, 45, 48,000 people pretty much every day, and the weekend sold out. And that for us was good, because that's what we want to see. You know, we want to see the fans to come in and supporting us playing baseball. And when that happens, you make a team to win.
And the ball would jump, especially the jet stream to right field.
Right field pretty much runs pretty good, obviously, because it comes in from right field, just hit the you know, the left side bleachers and come back. But it's still like a ballpark that you got to hit the ball. Mm. I know the ball carried good to right field, but you have to hit the ball good, because it was a big ballpark too.
Well, luckily you hit it very hard. You were so good at hitting opposite field doubles into that gap in right field. I mean, how much you talk about how natural you were as a kid, you know, as 10 years old, you realized you were really good. What about the hitting side for you? How much work did it take to become an elite hitter?
Well, this is funny, because this is true. I never think about hitting when I was a player. I always think about my catching game, call good games, do the job that I need to do behind the plate, and then go to the plate and see the ball and make contact and put the ball in play. obviously, I become a good hitter just because of that. I never think about anything. I do my I did my drills before the game and all that, but I was focused so much in my in my defensive part of the game. Then when I was going to the plate, it was easy for me to hit the ball.
When you would be at the plate, would you be thinking about, if I was calling the game,
no,
then I'm going to guess what they just called?
No. It's totally different. I never think breaking ball, I never think changeup, none.
Just react.
I just see the ball when the pitcher releases it, and see the ball all the way to me and make contact. Obviously, I was very good concentrate in my focus on the game.
That's amazing.
There were some times and pretty much all the time that I don't hear anybody when I was playing. Not even sometimes my family said a few games, maybe in the first, second row, right behind the on deck circle. And when they asked me after the game if I see them, I was saying, no, I didn't see you. and I say hi to them before the game, but I don't remember.
Wow.
So that's how focused I play the game.
Were there one or two pitchers that you could just never figure out that had your number?
Yes. Jeff Nelson.
Yeah.
Pitched for the Yankees.
The slider.
Slider guy, yeah. And who's the other one?
Must not have been that big a deal.
Pretty much, everybody's difficult.
Brandon Johnson?
There's obvious. Every pitcher is difficult. Okay, every pitcher is difficult because when you have a, let's say this, let's do a little math here. When you play 162 games, right, and you play every day, you're gonna have four at bats, right? Mm-hmm. And four at bats, 162 is 600 times. And if you hit 200 hits, it's an MVP season. How many times you're out?
Yeah, 400.
So pitchers always, dominate the game. Especially me. I mean, my career, I got over almost 11,000 at bat, and I have 2,000 something hits. But how many times I was out? So you, yeah, more
2,000 hits sounds better.
So you're gonna fail more than. You want to feel more than produce, but that's where the mind comes. If you're not ready mentally for that, you are not going to do anything. You have to be strong mentally that you're going to have 0 for 20, 0 for 30, but you got to keep playing. You got to keep playing. If some of those 0 for 30, you hit the ball hard, but someone is there for you to catch it. So that's okay. You make good contact, but... But for me, that's why I was very good, because I knew that's going to happen. And if your mind is not ready for that, I mean, you're going to have really bad seasons.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. We got one more with Pudge, and let's get into what dominated the sports landscape whenever your contract was up and the Sign Pudge rally to support you. We'll do that next with Pudge Rodriguez here at Tickets.
250 Pete Ones at the Plano Event Center today and tomorrow. Score exclusive merch from Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket.
It is 6:58 here on The Ticket, live from the Plano Center, Mullen & Mullen Injury Law Firm, Ticket Stock 2026, and our final roundtable segment with our featured guest, the Hall of Famer, Yvonne Pudge Rodriguez.
Thank you.
And it's brought to you by Phil Dill Boats and visitbigben.com. So Corby teased it before we went to break, and obviously you had a great Ranger career. You go on, you win a World Series with the Marlins, you play with the Tigers. But talk about the exit from Texas and just how tough that was for you and your family.
Well, it was tough because obviously you wanna start and finish with one organization and one team. That was my plan, and I got before in 2002. I think I was 5 years earlier in 2002. I was also on the on the trade rumors to be a Yankee, to play and trade me to the Yankees. And at the time, I wasn't ready. You know, my kids, they was young and they was here in school and we have a house here. We live here and I went to the you know, to the front office, and I went to Don Schiefer at the time and said, look, I want to stay here, and I want to take a pay cut, whatever, but I wanted to sign a long-term contract and stay here. I want to be a Ranger, and so it happens. Obviously, that was the year that I signed for 4 or 5 years, I think, if I remember. And then in 2002 was hard. Obviously, I knew that I'm just gonna be a free agent, and they're not gonna be able to sign me back. But at the same time, that's baseball. You know, baseball obviously is a job, but it's a business too. And at the time, you know, they have a couple of guys and. In my league, Salta Lamequia was there, and some other guys that was ready to be in the big leagues, and then I move on. Obviously, it was hard. Obviously, the fans, the support that I had, that I got with them, the last game, I'll never forget the last game that I was playing at the ballpark with the standing ovation that they gave me. I mean, pretty much the whole game, and plus I hit a home run too,
yep.
That game, and so that was the boom of the day there, and so, but it was nice. I think you know, I feel very happy to be part of the Rangers for, you know, since '88 all the way to 2002, played 12 years in the big leagues, and have the support from my fans. I always say that the Rangers fans are my favorite, because they are the best fans in baseball, not even in baseball, basketball, football, in everything. I think this is a sport town, and the support that I got with the fans, you know, through all those years, and believe me, into now, it's been amazing.
That last deal you got done.
Go ahead.
He was not asking a question, but that last deal you got done with the Rangers, there was all the reports of, well, they may not do it, and then you end up going into Tom Schieffer's office. But how much did that support you were just talking about, the sign Pudge signs at games?
I saw one sign earlier.
Yeah.
Someone here
the bumper stickers were everywhere.
Is that you? Town. Can you show it?
You got your sign Pudge out there?
There it is!
But about that support you were just talking about, what did that mean to you when those signs were everywhere?
It was incredible, because every car has that in their back. I mean, for some reason, I don't know who did that. I don't know who made that. I didn't.
They made some money.
It wasn't me. It wasn't me. But he ended up really good, and I think the front office and the Schieffer and the owners seen that and say, we have to do something with this kid, because if we trade this kid, we're going to even throw away all these stickers everywhere.
Go ahead, Gordon. What's your question that you were going to ask? It's Gordon Keith right there at the beard. You got smart ass over there.
What's that?
You're an idiot.
I wanted to ask, can you tell the story of the statue, how the statue got made, and then when you decided to give it to the Rangers that's now outside Globe Life Field?
Well, the statue comes, it was in the family. I have a cousin that knows the person that did the statue was a good friend of him, and he came to Miami and showed me in my house and some couple of drawings that he did about me. He showed me one standing up hitting, one catching, you know, real the real time, you know,
yeah,
catching. And then they showed me the one that he's here at the ballpark. And so I told him, okay, so why you show me, what is your idea? No, it's to build you one for free. And I was like, done. I was like, done. I got, okay, that, I like that. So he started to build it, and he built it in my house. That was when I lived in Miami Beach on the water. So he was in the backyard building it with pieces of metals, bronze, and all that, and did a good job. I have it in my house for a long time, and then I decided just to, well, John Blaze saw it, and he said, well, I think that it would be nice if you put it in the new ballpark. And I said, okay, where are you going to put it in the new ballpark? Well, we're going to put it outside, but it's going to be behind the plate, but outside. And I said, okay, take it.
And did you try and sell it to him?
Like? No. It's there, and I'm very happy to have it here at the ballpark. I'm very happy to. I see a lot of fans take pictures on the statue. I think it's better where it is than being my house.
How much did it mean a couple of years ago when they finally broke through and won it all? Like, for you, a guy that saw everything, and you guys were close, and then 2011 happened, and you know, a lot of people around here were like, "It's just not going to happen," and then it did. And for an icon of the franchise, what did that mean to you?
Well, it means everything. I mean, obviously, I've been in that situation three times when I was a player for the Rangers and got eliminated by the Yankees in three games. But just think about how many times the Texas Rangers organization has been in playoffs. It's been in a lot of playoffs, mm-hmm. and never make it. And so when that year happens, I was not a player at the time, but for me, I feel like if I was one of them, obviously, because we worked very hard through all those years, not only that year, through all those years, to get into that point. Obviously, winning the World Series is not an easy thing to do.
No.
Okay? You're competing with 31 teams, and there's only two left to win. And then you play a series of seven, and you cannot make any mistakes. Because if you make one, they're going to score runs on you. So you got to play perfect. But be able to see that team from spring training in Arizona work hard, and those guys came to Arlington and start to play, you know, the way they play, the whole starting pitcher staff was healthy the whole year, which is important, and the position player was important. I think that was a perfect season for us that year when we win the World Series, and the way that we play the World Series, the way we pitch in that World Series was hard to beat.
Indeed.
How much did that watch cost?
Don't worry about it.
Tell the guy that made the statue gave you that.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell him, Pudge.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Pudge Rodriguez. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pudge.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Are we shutting her down?
Yeah.
We're shutting her down. All right. We'll see y'all tomorrow at noon out here at Mullen & Mullen Personal Injury Law Firm. Ticket stock 2026. Thanks to all you guys that came out today, and we'll see you hopefully again tomorrow. Cheers.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Plaza, hard by the AAC, this is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Tick. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth, KTCK FM Flower Mound, a Cumulus station.